Yvonne, good morning. Welcome to Brad and Dan.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Thank you.
Let's, Yvonne, start with Syria. I don't know if people watched 60 Minutes last night, but it was just unbelievable what Assad is doing with the help of his willing accomplices, by the way, using this nerve gas. The videos on these people, particularly the young children, were very difficult to watch. What's going to happen over there, and what should we be doing?
Here's the thing. We are involved in a serious proxy war that has been going on since 2011 when this whole mess started with Bashar al-Assad. We have 5.4 Syrian refugees. Most of them are on the border of Turkey and the rest Jordan. And so what we have a situation right now, we have 2,000 military personnel and we are engaged in a heavy war. And that proxy war is mainly with Iran. When you look at how it's all set up, and there's a conflict between Russia and the United States in this situation. Bashar al-Assad is going nowhere. I did some history research related to in the Obama administration, and they kept saying Assad has to go. It looks like Assad's about to leave. Assad never left office. He's still there. And so we have to look at who's keeping him there. And how is he staying there? And the persons or the leaders that are keeping him there are Iran and Russia, Vladimir Putin.
Should we have more of our troops? Should we really get in it over there, or should we let?
We're in it, Brad. We're in it.
Well, I know we're in it, but I'm talking about: do we go over there to win it, or do we get out and let them fight it out themselves?
I don't know that this is a winnable situation. What they were trying to do about a month ago is Turkey, again, Iran, and Russia were trying to get some sort of ceasefire. The UN over the weekend tried to have a ceasefire so they could move in humanitarian aid and emergency evacuations out of Ghouta. But guess what? Under this UN resolution, Jabhat al-Nusra, which is a former al-Qaeda affiliate, al-Qaeda and ISIS, they're not covered under that. So the fighting and the shelling continues.
So what should we be doing? Should we somehow, Yvonne, then make a backdoor attempt and register even more sanctions against Russia in order to make them clamp down on Syria? Should we attack it from that angle?
You have a president that doesn't want to enforce sanctions against Russia. So you have a president.
How do you know he doesn't want to enforce sanctions against Russia?
The facts prove that right now. Under the Obama administration, there were sanctions that happened. The President Obama actually threw out spies out of Russia, and it has not been done. It has not been passed. It has not been enforced. And a lot of that has to do with what's happening in the United States of America. The United States and Russia have a deconfliction agreement in Syria, which means they have to let each other know when they're going in and attacking. Recently, when about 100 Russian private military members were killed that weren't a part of the official Russian military group, the Secretary of Defense came out and said, well, we're not sure how they died. Well, the United States is very much involved. Now, the CIA wants to put a 30,000-member border security along the lines between Turkey and Syria, but that has not gone over too well, obviously, by Russia. CIA has been very much involved in that. A lot of people don't know that information. I won't say any more about that, but this is pretty heavy of what's going on, and so we were most effective was April 4, where the president ordered that we send a message to Assad to say that this is inhumane what happened with the chemical weapons attack. And so now, recently, there's been a call for another chemical weapons attack that happened just recently. So we are just so, I don't think the United States wants to get so engulfed in this, but we are, and we're not leaving anytime soon. Because if it means the removal of Bashar al-Assad, he's not going anywhere, and he's been uplifted and held high mainly by Russia. Russia will thwart any UN Security Council resolution to try to remove him. It just is not going to happen. And
what's Israel's role in all this?
Well, Israel recently, there was an F-16 jet that was shot down by the Iranians. And so then Israel went in and got their drone. And then they were going to send F-35s in there to ramp up the aggression or the response, the retaliatory response against Iran, mainly in Syria. And then Vladimir Putin picked up the phone and told Benjamin Netanyahu, you're not going to do that. You're going to stop. And guess what? He stopped. So right now, Israel is not doing anything, but they are obviously concerned about their security as it relates to Iran. See, the biggest war that's going on, proxy war, is happening between the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and Iran. And so with that, other parties are engaged in that. The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, under Mohammed bin Salman, is trying to extend his power, which means basically that he will have to, at some point, with Egypt and Jordan, formally and publicly acknowledge Israel as a legitimate state.
Okay, this is Yvonne. We're coming up on a break.
Okay.
Hang in there. This is very key about Saudi Arabia and the U.S. involvement with the
Big
Saudis.
Time.
Very key.
Absolutely.
Brad, again, joining us in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chair is international relations expert Yvonne Renee Davis. Yvonne, we're talking about the Middle East and about Syria and Israel and Iran and all these countries that are involved. And now the United States, I guess, is considering selling uranium to Saudi Arabia, and they might develop a nuclear weapon. What's that all about?
Mohammed bin Salman, or they call him MBS, the United States has put a lot of faith in this 32-year-old leader who has, and since he's come to power, has put together a plan to construct a $500 billion, it's called NEOM in Arabic, which means new city, that involves high-tech, bio, advanced industry, media, entertainment, etc. And so with that, when the king and President Trump met in 2017 over the summer, they inked a $395 million deal related to new military toys. And now with selling uranium, what you're going to do is start an arms race in the Middle East, a nuclear arms race in the Middle East, and that is to thwart Iran. But that is not very wise to do such a thing at this moment, because we don't know ultimately if this leader will be successful, although there's some good signs with that, dealing with cracking down on corruption and a number of things, even giving women the right to drive cars. But the whole issue is 10% of the world's trade goes through the Suez Canal. And so that would, all the things, all the economic development that the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia wants to do depends on all of that.
If we didn't cut this deal, Yvonne, if we didn't cut this deal with Saudi Arabia, if we didn't sell them the uranium, then what would Saudi Arabia have done? How would that have affected our relations with that country?
Well, here's the thing. The UAE and Saudi Arabia have had agreements not to make a nuclear weapon. They use it for technology or research, similar to what Iran has claimed that they would be doing with what they're doing. But we run the risk when you have Saudi Arabia and Iran involved with wars in Yemen, in Syria, in Iraq, also involved in the uprisings that happened in Tunisia. There's too many instances where there's no direct conflict between the two polities, but there's a lot of war everywhere. Even the issue with Qatar right now, which has the highest per capita income in the world. And also Bahrain. Saudi Arabia is involved, their tentacles and everything. So to give that to them and allow them that opportunity makes them a superpower in the Middle East. I'm not sure. Maybe Israel is for that in exchange for its recognition. But I should ask, we asked about Israel, and I'll come back to that. Benjamin Netanyahu is in the fight of his political life. He is under investigation for serious charges of corruption and bribery. And so the Likud party is now looking at this and saying he might not be worth all of this protection right now, and people are moving away from him. So we have to remain to see if Bibi Netanyahu will still be in power. He's scheduled to come to the United States, I believe, this week.
Yvonne.
So, yes.
As you listen to all of this, and you see it on television, some people are saying, why are we even there? All they're doing, they continue to do it, is to fight and kill each other. And, you know, what are we getting out of this? You tell me what we, as the United States of America, getting out of this.
I think the mistake started, I hate to always say this, I'll call it as I see it, under George W. Bush, when they started having the Arab Spring, which became the Arab Falls. All these pushes for democracy, and we supported it behind the scenes or encouraged it behind the scenes under the Obama administration. The major debacle with Libya was a huge catastrophic failure to push this and what happened. And so that destabilization of the Middle East started there. And so what we have done is we pushed democracy, but we should not have done that. We made some critical strategic errors that now have put us in a situation. We have the Gulf War in Iraq, which we're still...
What should we have done in the Middle East? Should we have propped up these regimes, these totalitarian regimes?
I think, well, in some senses you do. I mean, General Sisi is a general that leads Egypt, which will cruise to another re-election in May. I mean, we still have these things going on. We have to ask ourselves, what games do we want to play? And because we don't have a coherent foreign policy under this administration, and it's built in one 32-year-old man that we're not so sure about, that has his own economic issues in the eastern region, then what you have done is open the door for Vladimir Putin to actually call the shots on what's happening everywhere. Like I said earlier, he called Bibi Netanyahu and said, stop, and Bibi stopped.
But so Yvonne, to be fair, that's a vacuum that developed under President Obama.
Absolutely, it did.
I said actually that I went back further.
George W. Bush,
President George W. Bush. I'm a supporter of the president. The president presented a lot of opportunities for me under this administration. But when you look and analyze what happened, there's a lot of problems that we are just now. We are so engaged in these spot, and then you have Turkey. I mean, you saw, I think I tagged you, Dan, on Facebook about the new troika, and I use a Russian term, of power. They're running together. You have Vladimir Putin, you have Xi Jinping, and you have, and then you, you
so,
have...
So the question becomes, if you had President Trump's ear, what would you tell the president about his Middle East foreign policy and what should be done?
I would tell him that he has to get a coherent foreign policy. It cannot be put in the hands of an inexperienced son-in-law, number one. And also, two, I would also tell him that as he moves with MBS, that he needs to make sure there's some serious checkpoints in play in terms of making sure that this happens from a balanced perspective. Right now, it's working for everybody wanting to get power. You're going to have to bring Qatar back into the dialogue. Okay, you say they fund terrorists? That would look like there's a history of it.
Yvonne, there's a lot of people who hear this stuff, who see it, and just say, what are we doing there? For what reason? It never ends. It goes on forever. So why even be there?
But you say that the isolationist approach has created just what's happening now, the vacuum. At least we had some policy-related diplomatic channels that were going on. And you could even say that in other parts of the world. You could even say that in Africa. Right now, what's happening? All we've done in Africa is militarize Africa. Every day, there's 10 military missions happening in Africa, increase military action there. There is no really formal diplomacy going on. So we're only paying attention to small things. And we have to look at everything from a macro perspective, because right now, we have a situation in China where they're about to vote Xi Jinping, the president of China, basically as no more term limits. He's now the new dictator.
And for life.
In power as long as he wants to.
That's right.
That same goes for Turkey.
You're right about that. Yeah.
Vladimir Putin's going to win with no problem in March. He actually, he's expanding. He wants to go into these other satellite countries to make Mother Russia great again. Vladimir Putin, his main issue, let me tell you what it
is. Ivan, I wish we had more time, but we're running out of time. But this is very fascinating. We'll see what unfolds. The Middle East continues to be a hot spot, and we never did get to North Korea, but we'll talk down the road. Next Thanks for time. Joining us.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care.